Good afternoon. Welcome to We the People. You have no idea how quickly we just got here. And for all those people that I sped past, I'm so sorry. And every now and then you see people speeding and you don't know what they're doing. They might have a radio show.
That's right.
It could happen.
Yeah, it might be 15 minutes late.
Yeah, or something. And poor Bill, he's sick, so we'll have to...
Yeah, we'll have to
give
my mic is like blowing my ears out.
And that's plus, right. He's just been on Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, so...
Mm-hmm.
We were at Disney World. I don't think we actually went on a ride that fast, though.
No, we didn't.
That was
definitely an e-ticket right there.
Yeah, it was e-ticket ride. So, yeah. All that disclaimer being said, my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor...
Maybe that's my confession for the day.
Yeah. Our sponsor this hour is Team Power. Team Power is our local John Deere Kubota tractor dealer. And if you want a great deal on a tractor, go out and see the folks out there. They've got pretty good inventory right now. And they've got a couple of used machines out there if you're looking for a used tractor.
Hot commodity.
Yeah, I hardly find those anywhere. But, yeah, go out and see them. They're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard. Or you can get them on the web at ReddingTractors.com.
Sweet website.
Phone number. Did I give you the phone number?
No.
530-226-9226.
I have to do the part I know.
Yeah.
That's the only part I know. Sometimes I get it right and sometimes I don't, which makes me unreliable on the commercial end. That's not good. So you can find all sorts of things about us, and I know you're going to want to send this show to your friends because, you know, if you suffered through the Kavanaugh hearings and you just couldn't take one more second of it, today is sort of like the reverse engineer of that whole thing, and we're going to have just a little bit of fun with the music. So if you want to call and tell someone that you're mad that I'm not a Women's March pink hat wearer, I am wearing a pink shirt today. Not that I can prove that over the air, but I am wearing a pink shirt, but I won't be wearing a pink hat because I just don't go in for that. I just don't. And anyone who knows me knows that. But just as a disclaimer on the show, the station doesn't get to tell us what to say or not say. How's that? So they can't take credit or be blamed. So it's all us. But you can go to wethepeopleradio.us and, sound off there, I suppose. Because we, and every now and then you meet people that are super interesting. And you're like, ooh, this would make a great radio program. And I got to tell you, we're going to do another one. She doesn't know it yet. But our guest, Chris Enns, is going to be our hostage for another Sunday at some point because she has, let me see, I want to get my facts straight.
She's written like 40 books?
Yeah, about women in the Old West.
Yeah.
So you would think this would be a big pink hat fest, huh?
Yeah.
No, women in the Old West were like stalwart.
It's like when women were
tough.
Women and men were...
afraid of them.
Yeah.
Because they carried guns and stuff. You know, and women had some gumption, you know, before we all just laid down and demanded people believe us about nothing because we're women.
They were hardy.
They were hardy. I couldn't find any songs about that, though. So let's see. Let me actually refer to the bio so I get it right. And you really ought to go to the page because her website is awesome. It's chrisenns.com, C-H-R-I-S-E-N-S-S. Her last name is deceptively simple, E-N-S-S. She is a New York Times bestselling author who's been writing about women of the Old West for more than 18 years. She's penned more than 40 published books on the subject. And her book, Entertaining Ladies, Actresses, Singers, and Dancers in the Old West, was a Spur Award finalist in 2017. The Spur Award. What a great award. Her book, Mochi's War, The Tragedy of the Sand Creek Massacre, received the Will Rogers Medallion Award for Best Nonfiction Western in 2015. And her book entitled Object Matrimony, The Risky Business of Mail Order Matchmaking in the Western Frontier, won the Elmer Kelton Award for Best Nonfiction Book of 2013. Really fun. She lives in Nevada County, and she got the Citizen of the Year Award from the Nevada County Historical Society for preserving the history of the gold country in the West. So she's got a really wide range of information on that, and she's written some really – I was looking at the cool book on Annie Oakley. I'd love to talk to her about that. But we wound up having a conversation about false allegations. Imagine that. False allegations of child molestation, and so that goes to a case about her brother and what happens when your family is hit with something like that, how difficult it is to defend against, and in an effort to, and I'm sure she'll tell us all this, but just by way of spoiler alert, in an effort to help her brother, she wound up getting her private investigator's license. And at that point, I'm like, oh my gosh, how quickly can we do the show? Because I can't stand it. We need to know more. So we're going to talk about all that kind of stuff. And I'm just going to tell you the music is going to be fun. So if you don't like, you know, a blast from the past, some of the songs that they wrote about bad women and bad relationships with women, you're probably not going to like the music. But, you know, if you're just burned out on the whole Kavanaugh thing, you're going to like it. This will be a feast for you.
What are you saying? There was bad women there?
Too many to count.
Yeah.
So anyway, you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. So we've got about 3 minutes till our first break. Sorry about that, Chris. We started off a little kooky. But thank goodness you called us, because the reason we were late is I had to go home and get my phone so I could call you. But you're like way smarter than I am, so you already called in.
Am I on?
You are on. Welcome, Chris.
I was being very quiet because I didn't know if I was on.
Oh, it's okay. So. You can always pipe up. We're not all about the perfection. It's definitely not our goal.
I'm glad to be part of the broadcast today. Thank you very much for letting me come on and talk about a subject that Aaron, you and I discussed and quite fed up with. So it'd be good to get into the meat of this discussion.
Well, it's one of those topics that there are women who talk about this, but not enough. You know, most of these women have been cowed into some sort of, we have to believe all women regardless of what they say because an allegation must be true if someone says it.
Well, it's their
truth.
Like,
oh, I'm sorry. Wasn't that the Salem witch trials?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the letters to the editor that I read this past week in the Union newspaper here in Grass Valley.
No.
That was one of the key sentences, was women should be believed. And there was no other caveat to it other than women should be believed. And I really think it needs to be prefaced only if they are telling the truth.
I heard that the other day on the radio. One of the announcers was saying that Ford's was telling the truth, and that's her truth, so we have to believe it because she said it was true.
Wow.
That's all we need.
So I can go out and get in someone else's car, and as long as I can start it, I believe it's mine, I can drive away.
It's your car.
There you go.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing is, being on the other side of this, as Aaron said, the agenda. Being on the other side of this,
I think we're going to use that word a lot today.
Yeah, you were deemed as somebody who is not championing women as a whole, and certainly that isn't the message that I want to portray. But just because I'm a private investigator, and the bulk of the cases I take are people who have been falsely accused of child molestation or sexual misconduct. My background has been women who have falsified this particular event happening in their life. And they do it because they can.
Right.
And now they can even more.
Right. I mean, it is the, as far as I'm concerned, it's the perfect crime. You don't have to have anything to back it up with.
But it's not a new crime. This has been going on for years and years and years. I mean, speaking as a white male, divorced, a nasty divorce.
How'd you get in here?
With two children, both females. That hung over my head with this woman for 15 years.
She pulled every dirty trick except that one.
All she had to do was make a phone call, and there's no way to defend yourself.
It's unfortunate that is the truth, but that is the pure truth of it. And we are now being made aware of this because of the situation with Kavanaugh, which could be both good and bad. It's a blessing to some degree that now that has been brought to the forefront of everyone's thought. And certainly this hashtag #MeToo, which I don't even know what that even means anymore.
Yeah, me too.
But, I'm sure we'll redefine it as our time goes by today.
You know, I mean, it is, my position on Kavanaugh, and just with my background working in private investigation and with people who make up things, I have this past week, and I'm very vocal about it. I'm not shy. There's a section on my website called The Plea, which is all about my brother's story, which I know that you've set it up a little bit, but I mean, I'll talk a little bit more about that as we go on to the broadcast too. But I have had three people this past week, women that I have worked with and the various organizations that I have worked with, that have written me and said, I cannot be your friend anymore because of your stance on Kavanaugh.
Just unbelievable.
I think, for a moment, I read this and I thought, I don't understand.
Carol, where's the LOL at the end?
Yeah, I just thought, so we cannot, it has to be, Ford has to be believed across the board, even though there are numerous things, as a private investigator, if I was going into her particular story, that I would have said, red flag, that I would never have. If I was working for the prosecution, I never would have said, you can't bring any, I would have said, you can't bring any charges against this person. There's nothing there. You're going to get killed on the stand.
Well, see, that's just it. You know, there's your truth and there's my truth,
but then
both
there's
of
the,
which hold the same amount of water, but you got to have some facts to back it up.
But then there's the agenda.
That's right. Yeah.
We'll be right back. Cut Chris Isaak back, but it's a great song. Baby Did a Bad, Bad Thing. Seemed to fit today. So, Chris, where would you like to start out?
You know, I think it would be important if I started out with the background of why I got involved as a private investigator and maybe gave some background into my brother's story, which might be the story of other people who have been in similar circumstances. If that would be okay, if I could.
Absolutely.
No, that'd be fine. We personally know people that have had that exact same thing happen to them.
And, you know, it's much more prevalent than what the world would have you to believe. You know, if you just watch Kavanaugh, you think, oh, this is an isolated incident. But, I mean, it's much more widespread than people know. But my brother married a woman in the early 90s, and she had two children from a gentleman that she said was very abusive to her. The children were 9 months, and that was a little boy, and the little girl I don't think was quite two. Anyway, they were married for more than 12 years. My brother adopted the children. She ended up, my ex-sister-in-law was having an affair with the gentleman that she was working with, and when she went to pursue a divorce and get full custody of the children, because by that time they had had a child together. My brother had a daughter from a previous marriage, so in total they had four children. She went to find out about a divorce and was told she wasn't going to get full custody of the children. That's when these allegations of child molestation came up. The initial report of child molestation was made. The daughter at that point was 15 years old, and my brother was quite strict with the girls not dating. And
because he was a policeman, right?
He was a police officer. That's absolutely correct. Thank you, Aaron. He was a police officer for more than 20 years. He was also in the military and was a decorated soldier in Desert Storm and a Desert Shield. And my brother was very strict with his girls. You're not going to go out and date until you're 16 years old. You're just not going to do that. And his adopted daughter went to school and drew on the back of a test that she was taking a little girl in bed, or a girl in bed, crying. Now, the truth of it was she hadn't studied for the test and was really doing very poorly on the test, and that's what the drawing was on the back. But when she was called up by the teacher, she then went and told the counselor that it was because she was being molested.
Wow.
No truth to it whatsoever. She then came out and said that there was no truth to it, that because she hadn't studied. But the school, of course, had to call that in. They're mandated to call in such reports. And so that's what happened. My brother left the home. They came and Child Protective Services came and did a they did a whole investigation. The accusations were unsubstantiated. The divorce, my sister-in-law was having an affair. The marriage was going increasingly downhill from there. My brother didn't know she was having an affair at this point. Of course, none of us knew what was going on until after the fact. And then after they were unsubstantiated, the stepdaughter makes the accusation again. And my brother was one of four people that she accused of molestation. One was my nephew, the other was a neighbor, and the other one was a bus driver. She realized the attention that she was getting from this kind of thing, and she was quite vocal about it, and it made no sense that she would have taken this kind of thing anyway, because I babysit for a couple of times, and I couldn't even get her to wash her hair. She would just tell me to go F myself.
Sounds like a lovely girl.
Yeah.
She was wonderful. So to think for a moment that she was shy. And then she said that this molestation from my brother happened every week, two and three times a week, for more than 2 years. And it happened every morning while everybody was in the home between 6 and 6:10. And that he would call her downstairs and entice her to, by looking at pornography.
Wow.
Which at this particular point in the 90s, or sorry, it was in early 2000s, they had dial-up. Which to download any of that stuff in a 10-minute period. So he was supposed to have gotten her up, taken her downstairs, downloaded this stuff, had intercourse with her, and then no one knew what was going on. When everybody got up. I mean, everyone was at home, she said. Safe exams were done.
What does that mean?
Safe exams are what, it's kind of like a rape kit that was done. And it showed that she had an intact hymen. So, being able to say that she had sexual intercourse with my brother two and three times a week, every week for more than 2 years, physically, there was nothing to support that allegation. But once you make this kind of statement, it's out there.
Sure.
So my brother, of course, when she makes these allegations, one happened in the school. It was unsubstantiated. The second one she made on Father's Day of 2004. And he hotlined himself because he was a police officer. And then it just started to get worse after that. He was a police officer, and his job with the police department was to investigate people who were molesting children. And so in his desk at his work were things like what is called the pedophile handbook. Not a how-to, but if you're a law enforcement agent, it's a pedophile handbook on what to look for.
Look for, yeah.
And that's what they call it, the pedophile handbook. But you have a teenager who makes this accusation, and then you have this kind of thing that was in your desk drawer. Also, he had a laptop, and on the laptop was quite a few hits to a site called Petoland, P-E-T-O-L-A-N-D, Petoland. But the prosecution said that it was Ped, P-E-D-O-L-A-N-D, Petoland. Petoland was a game that his children played on his laptop where you take care of a virtual pet.
Oh, my gosh.
So no one actually opened the program and looked at it?
No. What they did say was he had items on his laptop that were indicative of child porn.
Wow.
Not child porn, but indicative of child porn. So you can see from what I've said, you've got a substantial, a case of substantial evidence mounting against him. And that's all it was. Not substantial evidence. What am I trying to say?
Circumstantial?
Circumstantial evidence. So none of it would hold up. I mean, I ended up going in to meet with an attorney, and because at this point my brother also has Parkinson's disease. I forgot to mention that people with Parkinson's disease have a great deal of problems. I mean, he shakes continually. I mean, he had been with the police department for a number of years, and his career was going to be winding down anyway because of the Parkinson's disease. But just all of these things started to mount up, and then hiring an attorney and hiring the best attorney that we could. My husband and I, when all was said and done, it was $345,000 that we spent hiring an attorney. She got on the stand 3 times and said that she lied.
The girl did?
Yes. And all of that, all of this evidence that I'm telling you about is on my website under the plea, and you can see it there. You can see all the times that she was on the stand and lied. I have all of the court, the records there that they hold in court, that you can see that, where she says, yes, I lied about my father, and I would do it again.
Wow.
Wow.
So they had circumstantial evidence and no victim.
Circumstantial evidence, no victim, but it doesn't make any difference, because when I brought that up, the prosecution said, it doesn't matter. That's what people who have been molested say. They say it happens, then they say it didn't happen.
Well.
So I don't know what to believe then. And you have a great deal of the physical evidence. I mean, I also put on the on my site is from the physicians, 2 physicians that say, and you can read it, it will say, there is no physical evidence that supports that this teenager has had any sexual intercourse. It says that. None of those things made any difference. They said that our attorney said that there's a 97% conviction rate when you take these matters to court, because all the jury sees is a crying teenager pointing to the person that they say did it, and
everything else kind of goes down.
They don't hear anything and they don't see anything.
That's
97% conviction rate.
I could kind of see that. I mean, although it's bad, I could see that happening. We're going to take a really quick break here.
Okay.
And we're going to come back with our guest, Chris N., so you can find all our information at wethepeopleradio.us. And we're going to go out with Little White Lies by Sammy Hagar.
Little White Lies been around for years. Little White Lies ringing in your ears. You turn around, come around back on you. Catching up to you. Little white lies, see what you got to. Little white lies, come back to haunt you. Little white lies, got what you got to. Little white lies. You're taking my life, so take my soul.
Those are my 2 liar songs. The rest are all about bad women.
Very good. Very fitting.
We tried to find some good stuff for you.
Very fitting.
Yeah, that was Three Dog Night, just in case anybody wants to go hear the rest of the song.
Chris, your story should be a huge wake-up call for the men in this world.
Oh my gosh! If the hearing wasn't, you're lost.
And it's been this way for a while. I mean, I've been fully aware of it. You just can't put yourself in a position where somebody could make a totally unsubstantiated allegation against you. You can't protect yourself from that. You can't defend yourself from something that didn't happen. You know, so.
Well, and you know what's very unfortunate, because I have been a private investigator for a number of years, and these are the cases that I take on, and many men who are going through divorce. I mean, I have been in the room with them when the lawyer for the wife will say, you know, you can make this easy on yourself, or we can say that there was molestation that occurred.
I mean, that
will say that, because
that
they are
horrible.
Very much aware that you can make that kind of thing stick.
Yeah, even if they can't prove it, I think society will look at you as getting off on a technicality. You know, it's going to hang around your
neck.
You
get the finger pointed at you for a deal like that, and you're doomed.
Yeah, yeah.
It takes away everything a man was and everything he's ever going to be.
Yep.
It just does. And there is no question about whether or not we're parsing words here, or whether or not that's an opinion. It is. I mean, I work in this particular area, and I can tell you, this particular gentleman that I met with this past month, once this kind of allegation is made, you have to spend a great deal of time going through and creating a timeline for yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And then how you go forward, which was, you know, I instructed him, you're going to need to have somebody with you when you're with your kids. You're going to have cameras in places. You're going to have to write down what you do. When the gentleman just said, I don't know that I can live my life like that. It's easier for me to sign away my children than to have to put up with this.
Yeah.
Which is, it's a sad, crying shame that that's, on one hand, you think, well, who would ever do that? But, I mean, you have to live your whole life trying to defend yourself against something that you think is going to come up anyway, because now you can go back to 37 years and say something happened.
With no proof whatsoever.
Right. And I think all of that, you have to be, it would be irresponsible of me to say that everybody who says that is lying. Everybody who makes an accusation is lying, and I wouldn't begin to make that statement. When I go and investigate these particular things, and I go into a home and I see a young girl, when I go into the young girl's bedroom and I see that she's got a dresser that she frequently moves, you can tell that there's markings on the floor that she's moved in front of the door to block it at night. When she's got boxes stacked up that she puts in front of the door, I tend to believe that what this young woman is saying.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to have something of you have to be able to back it up with something. You have to have dates and times, something that makes sense. But so much of what is happening is an allegation is made, and that's all that you need. In the case with my brother, certainly that's all that was necessary, was an allegation, and all the other circumstantial pieces put together, and then being told by our attorney that I'd heard from my brother that there's a 97% conviction rate.
Yeah. So now, at that point, continue on. What happened after that?
I was at this point. Now we're at 2006. This happened in 2004. This has been going on for a couple of years with him. Now we're in latter part of 2005, early part of 2006, in which my brother was now being held. He was now being held in a facility because of all of this. It was a jail sort of, but he was being held in a facility. In this facility where he was being held, he ends up being beaten and raped, and he has Parkinson's disease. Now, because this is where you have to go. You have to be in this situation while you're waiting to be, whether this is going to go to trial or what. Beaten and raped with Parkinson's disease. I'm at this point named his guardian, and they call me in, and the attorney says to me, my attorney's on one side with a private investigator who did nothing, and several other banks of lawyers that say this, the we suggest that you take a plea. The plea that the prosecution is offering is, at this particular time that I'm talking to you, the plea is now 18 years. For every hour you don't take this plea, they're going to raise that year, they're going to raise that time by a year. Well, I'm unable to get a hold of my brother, even if I could. He's in no position. He's now completely traumatized. And in a medical unit, there's nothing I'm just trying to figure out what to do. I'm being told there's a 97% conviction rate. Trying to figure out what to do. 2 hours passed. We're now 20 years.
Oh.
I end up saying, yes, we'll take the plea. I didn't know what to do.
And at the time, you weren't a private investigator.
I wasn't a private investigator.
You were writing books about the Old West.
I have never, my background in law enforcement and anything having to do with attorneys was based on everything I saw on L.A. law.
Oh, no. Or like us.
Or anything that I saw on Matlock. I never imagined this for the life of me. I would never imagine that they would take circumstantial evidence, and especially in this particular instance, and want to do this. I never would imagine this would happen to somebody who's a decorated soldier. She had been to my niece had been to several counselors who said this person, and that I put the medical reports on there too, that said she is she's a habitual liar. I never would have imagined with all of that information that my attorney wouldn't be willing to take this forward. But you've got to be willing, too, as a defendant, to go the whole nine yards. And if it's a 97% conviction rate, and you're told that also I was told 97% conviction rate, if a guilty plea is returned, which they're telling me it's a 97% conviction rate, the prosecution was going to ask for two life sentences. Oh. Life is 33 years. And they were going to ask for two of those. So my choices at that point were, as I gave you, two life sentences if found guilty or 20 years for this plea. And I'm with an attorney after $345,000 who wasn't going to do any more than they did. I was between a rock and a hard spot. My brother, of course, 20 years. And it's been the most difficult 20 years. I mean, he's been in now for 16, and it has been nothing short of hell, where the family has been, my family, my parents, my brother and I and my husband have been through, we've been in a prison of our own, which is what prompted me to call Aaron to begin with about the prison situation. But I then became a private investigator and began investigating my brother's case. And that's when I found all the documents that showed that my niece was on the stand three separate times and said that she would lie. My attorney never even brought that
up. Oh, you didn't? You guys didn't know that?
No.
Oh.
I had no idea.
Was that all done in like some kind of closed? We don't know a lot about.
Okay, some of it was done in the divorce hearing.
Oh.
When it was the child custody. She got on the stand then and said that she lied and would do it again. When the depositions were being taken for what she said happened to her, I did have a different attorney at that point before it got to this federal level, which it got to the federal level because they said that he had items on his laptop that were indicative of child porn. So I'll get to that in a minute. But her telling these lies, I didn't know anything about it until I got in and could get my hands on this evidence. Mm. That was my other mistake with attorneys. I believed that they were forthcoming, that they would be forthcoming, that they championed you. I didn't know that they didn't do that. I didn't know that most attorneys work things out by plea agreement. I had no idea. When I went in to meet with the attorneys, they didn't say, listen, most of what we do is plea agreement. I thought everything went to trial. That's not the case. It's not the case at all. As I said, with as a private investigator, one of the other things that I got a hold of was the things that they said were on my brother's computer, which was all of this, what they said was child pornography. I got this huge mass of information off of his laptop that they pulled, off of the home computers that they pulled, all the things that they said were indicative of child porn. Let me give you an example. One of the things they said was child porn was as I said, he had four children. They all used the computer at home. They all used his laptop computer. One of them was doing a report on the White House. Well, if you Google White House, you're going to get really unseemly sites. You just will. Somebody has figured out that people want to look up the White House, bought that particular site, and it's now really horrible, ugly things. Which, let me just say, too, that when people say it's child pornography, I don't mean to imply that it is children under the age of five doing horrible things. I mean we're talking young girls from the age of 15 to 18 who have taken pictures of themselves and put it on the Internet. That kind of thing is what they're calling child pornography, which I'm not saying my brother did that, but he had four children at home. One was a son. He was doing the report on the White House. If you type in the White House or whatever it is that they did, you don't get the White House from Washington, D.C. You get a pornography site.
Yeah, and once that's on your computer, you can't take it off.
And once that's there, that's there. Now, they attributed all of this to my brother, which was another one that's patently not true. But those are the kind of things. People will make up names for weather sites. A lot of these sites...
things that are frequently accessed.
For example, one of the weather sites that they looked at all the time is called Twisted Sister. Okay, now they said there's also a sister site, Sister Twisted, which is a child pornography site. But see, they said that those things were indicative of child porn. Now, I got this particular file and looked into every one of those sites, and except for the White House one, none of them had any pornography at all. They had words that were indicative of child porn.
Right.
As I said, Petoland, which is Petoland. But if you're the prosecution and you want to make a case stick...
Oh, yeah, that sounds horrible.
Yeah, you say it's Petoland. And that's the kind of thing that you bring up. If you don't know that on the other end, that's why I became a private investigator, not just because I wanted to get at the bottom of what happened with my brother, but just that I could not stand to have this happen to one more man.
Well, it's kind of amazing.
Good for you. We've got to take a really quick break on that point, but...
Okay.
You'll have to interrupt me.
It's all right. We have to interrupt ourselves. Ashley's over there giving us the high sign.
She interrupts
and then she
me
gives us the higher
time.
Sign and the higher sign. And, you know, we just keep ignoring her. It's terrible. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Look out. Show him the future's the past. Same cat with them.
we're back. Chris, I would imagine...
Another classic, by the way.
We're
not done with them. There are more.
Oh, I'm sure
our entire childhood was filled with songs like that.
Yeah.
I think it was like a harbinger of something to happen in the future, and we all know that these songs will never be played again, so this might be the last time you hear them.
Oh, and for the record, Twisted Sister is a rock group, too. So, I mean...
Yeah, it is.
FYI.
But you don't... But see, if it's... If that particular name is now associated with any kind of pornographic site,
right.
You cannot go on and look up Twisted Sister the band.
Yeah.
Because the prosecution won't say it's Twisted Sister the band.
Right.
and then most of your jurors, who are probably not, big rock and roll listeners. I mean,
well,
they don't. My mom wouldn't know what that is.
The break that prosecutors on cases like this. You know, you think, well, Jesus, they don't have a heart. I mean, to take a case like this to trial, when obviously the kid's lying, there is no real evidence, but the political ramifications of letting, you know...
Even then, what year was this?
This was in 2004 to 2006.
So it's not even current, and imagine what it is now.
Yeah.
I would imagine this is just... Yeah. Growing exponentially.
The women, they were women prosecutors who cut their teeth on getting sex traffickers.
Right.
Okay.
And they wanted to make a name for themselves.
That's it right there.
Bingo.
That's why they press these cases.
And so that's why now whenever I hear, oh, they're trafficking in sex, and I'm not trying to say that that doesn't happen, but now I look at everything with a very... very concentrated eye.
Yeah.
I want to know what you're talking about.
Because it does happen. It happens a lot. And my brother was a parole officer for his whole career, and he
for sex offenders
for sex crimes division.
Yeah.
And he told me that pretty much 100% of sex offenders will reoffend when they get out. They cannot be rehabilitated.
But I'll never forget standing in the airport with him. We were waiting for Bill's mom to come back from a trip, and standing there in the airport, just killing time, waiting. And he says,
was profiling
and
people.
He says, "Oh, you see that guy over there? Look at the way he's standing. He's a sex offender." And I'm like, "Really?"
Yeah.
And at that time, I'm thinking, "What?" And then he goes, "Oh, see that guy over there? Well, basically, it was every man that was in the airport." Was doing, standing a certain way. He was looking at something. I'm like, wait a minute. There can't be this many sex offenders. I mean, just Vegas odds wouldn't give you that
jaded,
many sex offenders.
You've got to get a jaded eye doing that your whole life. But some of the facts he had on that were
yeah, I mean, I get it that it's not a
compelling.
Probably a rehabilitated crime. But
there's a lot of it that, like your case, Chris, where... all they have to do is make the accusation.
And now you're in the system. Now you're labeled.
Now you're labeled,
right.
And it'll never come off.
And, you do have to make a differentiation between those two. And that's something that I believe that the far left doesn't want to do.
Oh,
they
no.
don't want to make that differentiation. It's everybody. If
well, these are people who don't want to spell woman with man in it, like W-O-M-A-N. Now they've started spelling it W-O-M-Y-N. It's like,
oh my God,
how tedious is that?
It's nuts.
Men are bad. All men are bad and abusers, and all women are victims. And at some point, this really does a massive disservice to women.
And
young girls.
It's, for me, as a woman, for me, and doing what I do part of the time for a living, I absolutely, whenever somebody says, oh, this person is being accused of child molestation, I never at this point think, okay, that's probably true. I always think, let me see.
Yeah.
Let's talk. Because the other thing is you have to ask, what are you defining as sexual misconduct or sexual molestation?
Yeah, because
sometimes...
It's like almost nothing. We know some
people... They spank their kids.
No, I'm thinking of those people, the friends of my mom's, and their son, their adult son, who was in his 20s or whatever, was in a... I'm going to get it wrong. I don't know if it was a national park or it was a national forest. It was something like that. It was a national...
On vacation.
National something or other. And he was a bike rider. and they were going bike riding. Well, they got there at like 4:30 in the morning. They were going on some up some mountain, and so they were changing into their bike riding clothes. And so they, you know, open the front door, open the back door of the vehicle, and just like stand in between and pull on their bike riding pants. There's nobody there. Nobody there. It's deserted. And a park ranger happened to see him. He wound up labeled as a sex offender.
Had to register as a sex offender.
Yeah.
And see, that is horrendous that we do that. Then you can't tell the difference between that person who hurt J.C. Lee Dugard and did everything that he did,
mm-hmm.
and the person like this biker that you're saying. Now, that's insane. I mean, I get hired by schools because they want to know about the blue dots around them. Who those sex offenders around them are.
Oh, they so you kind of drill in and figure out what their background is?
Well, yeah, you want to know, okay, what are they? I mean, they should be varying degrees of color, but they're not. So you don't know, there's nothing to differentiate a person, like I said, the Elizabeth Smart person, that guy who took Elizabeth Smart. There's no differentiation between a wacko like that and a guy that was 17 years old with his buddies and mooned a busload of other teenagers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That guy that mooned is now a sex offender. And that's one of the guys living around the school that they want to know, who is this person? That guy is not a threat. The guy who mooned someone at 17 is not a threat. He's a moron.
He's a bad decision maker.
Yeah.
And who didn't think that? I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, some of these things that people are saying are
That was always considered, I mean, things like that, we actually knew what category to put those in. I was a teacher a long time ago in my first life, and I remember I was on a trolley with a bunch of Girl Scouts, and this kid was on the football team, and they drove by in a Mustang, and one of them mooned the trolley. I mean, it was a Mustang, right? So how big was the window? You couldn't really see much, but I did catch the jersey number, and I was back in the 80s, but, you know, I put a giant pair of, tidy whities in an inner office envelope and sent it to the kid's classroom and said, I don't want to see that again. I mean, like, I basically mocked him. I could have made him a sex offender. That's horrible.
Yeah, see, that was, he could have.
I mean, I just embarrassed him, letting him know that, like, he really wasn't anonymous with his football jersey on, you know.
But see, there's no discernment now. No one can discern.
Yeah, that's crazy.
A stupid thing like that.
Good but thing I wasn't a mandated reporter, huh? I'd be in jail.
Yeah, and now they're forever having to be registered as a sex offender.
That is just ridiculous.
It's horrible. Hey,
and to get off that sex offender list, you know, that's in and of itself.
We're coming back with our guest, Chris Enns. Chris, we're going to take a quick break for the news. You can find all our information at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and we have a sponsor this hour, Team Power. They're our local John Deere Kubota tractor dealer. They're up on Twin View Boulevard, 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And everything tractors. If you need it fixed, you need to buy one, sell one, whatever it may be, Team Power's your one-stop shop. Their phone number is 226-9226, or you can reach them on the web at readingtractors.com.
And all the best tractors are either green or orange.
That's right.
Those are the only colors tractors
that's
should be, is green
one
or
number
orange.
Two brand in the,
so that's
in,
like
in
the bottom
America.
Line there. We need to get that
yeah.
a
and
bottom
American
line.
Made, believe it or not. People don't think they're made in
I
America.
I know. They all think they're made in Japan, but they're
no,
not.
No,
just
they're
the
not.
Engines.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Shop American.
Yep.
Okay, so we're back to our, this is going so fast. It's going faster than I wanted. But today the disclaimer is probably good because we'll take total credit for the show. We don't want anybody else to get blamed, but enough's enough. You know, the pink hats, the Me Too, the women never lie. If somebody accuses somebody, they're guilty until, well.
Guilty until proven
just
innocent.
They're just guilty. Yeah. They don't ever get proven innocent. They're just guilty.
Yeah, if you can't prove
you
you're innocent,
the finger,
obviously you're guilty.
I should have called this show Salem Witch Trials 2.0, but instead I named it False Allegations of Child Molestation. It got longer, actually. False Allegations of Child Molestation, Sexual Misconduct, and Prison Reform in the Age of the Vagenda with our author, Chris Enns, who is a private investigator. You never get tired of it.
You're such a word smite.
I smited it into the title there.
Very good. Very good.
So please share far and wide. And, you know, for all those people who are just frustrated with this whole thing, and I got to tell you, I am shocked at how many men are not frustrated by it. They're somehow jumping on the bandwagon. I don't know if they're trying to, I don't know, it's like some weird Stockholm syndrome. Maybe if we side with them, they won't attack us.
Well, they've never been accused, or they've probably not had contact with somebody who has been accused falsely. And I tell you what, that's a bad thing.
We live in a country that is based on the rule of law, and the rule of law says you have to have proof. But Chris's story about her brother is all about how you don't have proof. If you missed the first hour, please go to wethepeopleradio.us and we'll have an archive up there right after the show, and it'll be commercial free by later on.
And just the fact that you have to cop a plea on something like this to prevent the full force of the law coming down on you because you can't prove your innocence.
That's evil.
That is wrong.
So, hey, Chris, let's go back to that. Oh, and by the way, we're just dying to do a show on all your Western books and find out about...
Oh, my gosh, how much fun would that be? Because... You know, you mentioned Annie Oakley at the very beginning of this, and I don't want to go off on a rabbit trail here, but, you know, Annie Oakley, we know so much about her being with the Buffalo Bill Cody show that we completely miss the fact that she spent 6 years of her life fighting William Randolph Hearst in court for defamation of character. The book that I wrote called The Trials of Annie Oakley is about that particular area of her life.
And she won that, didn't she?
She sued, he owned 55 newspapers in the early 1900s when this happened. She sued all 55. She won 54 of the 55 cases.
Dang.
She won as little as 10 cents and as much as $1,000. She lost money on the deal.
Wow.
The 55th newspaper, they did retract the statement, and the editor that retracted the statement was fired. But
There's just so much... great information. So it's kind of like today we're talking about the evil side of women and girls and what can go wrong there. But we have a rich history in America with some of our women from the West, and I'd love to do a program about that.
And it's amazing since I have three brothers. And my brothers, I became also the president of a father's rights organization, too. And, I have had my car keyed by women. I've been shot at by women. You know, women that have told me, listen, we have taken a back seat to men for so many years, and if this is the one way that we can get ahead, why don't you let us get ahead with this?
Wow, but, lying. That's so honorable.
I absolutely believe that if you accuse somebody of a crime, you should have to back it up with something. And when my brother was fighting for his life and fighting for his credibility and his background and his integrity, and he would get passionate about that much in the way that Kavanaugh got passionate about it when he was in the hearings, and people would say, who was he? He got too mad, and why is he getting so mad at this? He shouldn't get so mad at this. I think he's lying because he got mad at
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Can you
You're
imagine?
Fighting for your life.
Fighting for your whole reputation, your life, and your future. Getting mad is just the beginning.
I mean, you read everything about this guy's life, and this comes out of nowhere. I mean, guys like Harvey Weinstein or whatever, I mean, they scratched the surface on that, and, you know, all the garbage came flooding out. That was, I mean, a veritable tsunami of information. But this particular situation, it's like everybody goes, wait a minute, he was actually a really nice guy. And then he drank beer. That killed me. I was talking to somebody who said, well, you know, he drank beer in high school. And I said, okay, well, let's look around because probably most everyone within vision, you know, the scope of our vision here, drank beer in high school. Does that make us all criminals? I mean, that's stupid.
It's amazing the level. And conversely, you can see that women are guilty of so many horrible things like that what they were accusing Kavanaugh of, but it's not looked at in the same way.
No.
Let me give you an example. This past week, Neil Patrick Harris, the actor, was on The View with Whoopi Goldberg. He reminded her during this particular conversation that they were having that he was a 15-year-old gentleman who was on one of his very first films with Whoopi Goldberg. And during the filming of this, Whoopi Goldberg, who was in her 40s at the time, goes over to Neil Patrick Harris and says, in 10 years' time, you and I are going to have sex.
Ew. On every level.
Now, you know, the characters notwithstanding, she's 40, he's 15. Let's flip that around.
And he reminded her that she said that?
He reminded her of that, and she said,
how'd that work out?
I might have said that. And she said, you know, that was back in a day when you can joke around like that and that'd be okay.
Oh,
well, that's only okay
because
it's a woman saying that to a 15-year-old. But let's flip that around.
Yeah.
Let's say you're Harvey Weinstein and you make that comment to a 15-year-old girl on a film.
Doomed.
Somehow that changes things, doesn't it? And I'm saying it shouldn't change things.
Right.
Yeah.
It's wrong no matter who you are.
And I'm outraged that we don't have, that there is that double standard. But there is that double standard. I mean, how many 20-something teachers do you hear that are women that have been having affairs with their 16-year-old students?
Yeah, kind of bunches of them.
And you get, like, high signs, like, good for that kid, good for her, you know? If you flip that around, there's something smarmy about it. But when a woman does it, it's, you know, you want to celebrate the teenagers.
It could be love.
Yeah.
Right? It could be love. They talk about that. Well, they were so in love.
And I'm just saying, I am as a female, I am outraged that we don't see that as taking advantage of somebody, and all they get is a smack on the wrist. I am outraged that more men, as you said, Aaron, more men are not upset about this, but I think
they're afraid.
And I cannot tell you how many, you know, probably after this broadcast and people go on my internet site, which I don't care if they do. I want them to go on and read the plea and read what happened to my brother and know that this is so widespread. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I want them to be able to see that. But I know that I will get scores of hate emails.
Well, let's make sure that we get all the hate email, because I have this super song I found this morning at like 3 o'clock by John Michael Montgomery called Sold. And it was in 1995 we had a song like this. And I only took out a little piece, but kind of a catchy little tune. You got to listen to the words, though. We'll be right back with our guest, Chris Enns. You're listening to We the People. Join us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Well, I went down to the Grundy County auction, where I saw something I just had to have. My mind told me I should proceed with caution, but my heart said go ahead and make a bid on that. And I said, hey, pretty lady, won't you give me a sign? I'd give anything to make you my own mind. I'll do your bidding and be at your beck and call. Yeah, I've never seen anyone looking so fine. Man, I gotta have her, she's a one of a kind. I'm going once, I'm sold on the lady in the second row. She's an 8, she's a 9, she's a 10, I know. She's got ruby red lips, blonde hair, blue eyes, and I'm about to bid my heart goodbye.
I was born in the wagon of a traveling show. My mama had to dance for the money they throw. Mama would do whatever he could, preach a little gospel, sell a couple bottles of Dr. Good. Gypsies, tramps, and thieves would hear it from the people of the town. They call it gypsies, tramps, and thieves. But every night all the men would come around and lay their money down.
There we go. Got it out of our system there. I knew you'd like Sold, though. I wish I should have done it opposite so we could hear you laughing. Can you believe that was... I mean, if somebody tried to release a song like that now?
it's just amazing. I mean, we've changed so much, and everything. And that's the other part of this that I think is amazing. When it comes to sexual misconduct, there are some things that men do that warrant, that is not necessarily litigious. It warrants a kick in the groin, and that's it.
Yeah, sure.
Everything is not a matter of taking to court. But everything is viewed as, the things that they view as sexual misconduct, you think that is it? There's nothing.
Well, one thing it does is it truly diminishes the bad acts that need to be highlighted and
prosecuted.
Yeah. Because, you know, on a serious note, I look at what this portends going forward for women. I guess I'm thinking young women mostly, but they present a clear and present danger for a business owner at this point. Because they're being raised in and really schooled in how to turn everything into a sex crime, and wouldn't be surprised if it became difficult to find work depending on the line of work you're in.
You know,
people just don't want to deal with it.
Many of the cases that I get to come from human relations places where they have been bombarded with calls saying, you know, from women who didn't get a promotion, and then, you know, they're upset about it.
Yep.
And, you know, therefore now I'm going to come forward and say this guy touched me inappropriately.
Right.
Well, I can think of a case where this gal wasn't doing her job, and she was doing a terrible job. And a new manager came in and started to document her work. And it was like, you know, you're going to do your job or you'll find another one. And so she turns around and cries sexual harassment. And that guy gets fired, ruins his life. He winds up basically couch surfing in middle age, and his reputation is destroyed.
Sure.
He didn't do anything.
No one's going to hire him with that in his background.
So in comes the next guy. As soon as he begins to actually act like the manager, there's another, you know, how about sexual harassment? And then, that guy leaves. I think we're on, we went through two or three people. And then, I mean, what does the business have to do at that point? Well, let's promote her. Let's not have any men be her boss. And
right.
that way we've solved the problem. And I'm thinking, wow, that's not what women should be wanting.
It isn't what they should be wanting, but I believe that is,
I don't see that as justice or a good trend or any of that.
That's what we're doing. I mean, I a few years ago, I volunteered with a organization here in Nevada County called the Friendship Club, and I was supposed to be mentoring a young woman writing a story. She was 13 years old. I picked her up to take her to the library to do some research on this so we could begin doing the preliminary work for the story. En route, she informed me that her science teacher was giving her a lot of pop quizzes, and if he didn't stop, she was going to accuse him of molestation.
Holy cow.
Wow.
I turned around and took her home, and I immediately stopped doing any work with that organization. Kids are smart. They know exactly what to do. They know the system now. This is what we've bred.
Yeah.
Well, I think the precursor to this was child abuse. And, I mean, we all know there's child abuse. I mean, there's real child abuse. But when we were kids, if your parents grounded you, or mine didn't, my dad was, you know, one quick, you know, shot to the rear, and that was the end of that, you know, just spanked you. And it wasn't, you know, you didn't limp for a week or anything like that. I mean, it was just your basic, out came Mr. Hand, you know, and everybody got an attitude adjustment. But that stopped when we were really little because we figured out who was in charge of things. My dad didn't take advantage of that, or I don't know, you know, wait till your father gets home. Remember that? That was actually something people said. And, you know, we drank out of hoses and, you know, all those things.
Right.
And most of that turned out okay. We had some respect for authority. I mean, we knew we shouldn't run from the police or pull guns on them. I mean, we learned those things at home. But now, if your parents look at you sideways or don't give you enough dessert, you can call CPS. Can you imagine if we would have done that as kids? Called CPS on her parents. Not that we ever knew there was CPS, but...
You know, and I just am fearful of the society that we're creating with all of this and what women are walking away learning to do. I mean, and before I go off and say, you know, first of all, I love to write about women of the West because there isn't any woman that ever said, I'm going West because I'm a woman.
Good one. They didn't sit there and wait for somebody to do it for them either.
Yeah, the fact that they were a woman wasn't anything that they brought up and said that they could or couldn't do because they were women. That was not the case. I just finished a book about, it's called No Place for Women, and it's about women fighting for their right to vote. But even the way that they did that was done in a very dignified manner in which women realized the effect that they were having on the world as a whole and how they wanted to set their place in history. And that was something to be respected. There's nothing to be respected when you falsely accuse somebody of a crime and you can get away with it. One of the things I wanted to touch on with regards to my brother was out of his family home for more than 75 days, and the FBI went in to do the investigation, and my ex-sister-in-law had all the computers, everything, all of these disks, all of this compiled in the living room waiting for the FBI, and that they took as evidence against my brother. I mean, I can throw anything. They didn't come in and do an investigation of the home. She pulled everything together.
Oh, and wow.
That's not how it's supposed to be done either.
No.
That all of that is completely inappropriate. It could have been anything. It could have been a neighbor's. It could have been anybody's.
But once the finger is pointed at you and you're clipped as a, you know, for child molesting, I would imagine help is pretty, I mean, assistance, I should say, is pretty unavailable. I mean, nobody wants to be the one who got the child molester off the, you know, out of the charge. I mean, once you're accused, you're kind of stuck, I would think.
Chris, I'm kind of curious, when your brother was going through all this, did any of his friends or brothers on the force, did any of them step up? They did.
I have numerous letters from all of them that stepped up and said, There isn't any way that this is possible. We know the character of this man, but a weeping teenager trumps all of that.
Yeah.
And that's a sad, sorry fact, but it is the true statement.
And, you know, you had said that she recanted, what, three times?
Three times.
It's interesting, and I had told you about this on our phone call, but I guess I should include it here. I received a phone call from a lady who wanted help getting her husband out of an additional sentence as a wife abuser, you know, a domestic violence deal. And it turned, and it, so I started asking questions, and the whole thing didn't really make sense to me. Well, you know, he didn't do it. And I said, well, he didn't do it. Why is he in jail? I don't understand that. And she said, well, I was mad at him. And so I went to the police department and I told them that he was beating me. And they came and arrested him, and I was just doing it to pay him back. It's like, okay, that was a great idea to start with. And I said, okay. And she said, but I went in and I told him he wasn't doing it. Now, here's like the evil twist of the thing. She goes back in and said, look, I really don't want him prosecuted. I was just doing it to teach him a lesson because I was mad at him. I mean, kind of a, I don't know who thinks up these things, but the police said, it's okay. We're not going to let him out. He can't get to you again. You don't have to change your story. We'll protect you.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, no, no, you're not protecting me. I was lying. I mean, she was real clear about it. Right. I was lying. No, no, we know you're only doing that so that he doesn't come after you. So we're going to make sure that we throw the book at him. She's like, no, don't throw the book at him. I was lying. She could never convince them that she was lying and they were going to help her. So her taking back the story, like,
well,
never counted for anything.
And, you know, the other thing about this is you will never get a prosecutor to say, I made a mistake. They will fight tooth and nail to twist the facts because they are not going to go back on it. They just won't.
No.
The other thing about this is many people who are involved in these situations take pleas because they don't have any more money to fight it. The government has an endless amount of money, or so they think. They don't really. But they have a lot more money than the average person.
Well, and then when they presented, what was your brother's, what were your, the options for your brother were take a plea or for, and do how many years?
20. The plea was 20.
If he didn't, every hour he didn't take the plea was another
year.
Another year.
So how does that work? And then just recently I had applied for compassionate release because he has been in the federal system now for 16 years with Parkinson's disease. His health has substantially deteriorated. He is now walking with a walker. His eyesight has deteriorated, which is what prompted my phone call to Congressman LaMalfa about the situation, because my husband and I pay $250 a month for his health care, which he doesn't get the health care.
Yeah.
A lot of people say, wait a second, he's in federal prison. That's a government-run organization. Why are you paying for it?
Yeah, we need to get to the third part of what we promised, because we talked about false allegations, sexual misconduct. Now we got to get to this prison reform thing. Let's take a really quick break. And when we come back, I'd like for you to tell people what you've learned about that, because it was really illuminating. We'll be right back with our guest, Chris Enns. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Got a black magic woman. Got a black magic woman. I've got a black magic woman. Got me so blind I can't see. That she's a black magic woman. She's trying to make a devil out of me.
We're back.
And I've not exhausted all the songs. I've got two left. And you know what? We had to play some fun music. And the one thing I didn't tell people about your bio is not only are you an award-winning screenwriter, you've written for television, short subject, and feature films, but you've also written stuff for stand-up comedians.
Well, yeah, years ago I was a stand-up comedian. I made my way through college doing stand-up comedy, and
I was
blessed to be able to open one time for Phyllis Diller and then another time for George Burns, which people are like, who the heck are those people? But
no,
I mean, way back when.
Real actual comedians.
They're
gold standard comedians.
Wonderful to be around those people, and so that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to go into comedy, which I thought would be a wonderful thing to do, but comedy is so incredibly subjective. I mean, I could walk into a room and do 5 minutes of shtick and not everybody would laugh, but if I walk into a room and tell somebody about what happened to Annie Oakley, people might be riveted, you know. So
right.
I did a shift with all of that. And then, you know, I feel like I used to be a lot more funny than I have been.
I was just going to say, and then your fun sort of got shot out from under you.
Isn't that amazing? You just feel such a character change because of everything. And a real sad, very cynical view of the way things run now. Like I said, with regards to the prison, and I know that I am not alone in knowing this. If you've got a loved one in federal prison, the treatment that loved one gets going in to see the loved one that's in prison, the treatment that you get from the prison as a whole, from somebody that if you've not even done anything. I mean, the people on the outside are going in to see their loved ones and they're treated like dirt.
Right.
Does it matter what offense the person in there committed? I mean, do you get the feeling that it has anything to do with that, or is it just general?
I don't think it has anything to do with
okay.
that. I mean, and I have been with my brother in federal prisons from Leavenworth all the way out to Terminal Island in Long Beach, and the treatment is horrific. you know, when we were at Long Beach, you had the visitation room, and you have four walls. One of them faces out, and you get to look at a window. But when the guards set up for the people's family to come in and see the inmates, they make sure that all those chairs are faced the wall.
Oh, really?
And you sit in there for sometimes 3 hours before they even begin to process your paperwork to get in to see your loved one.
Wow.
They will cram as many as 120 people in this one room, and they won't let you stand in the doorway to even hear them say your name when it's your turn to get in. And they take great delight in that kind of thing. In Terminal Island, when you get in to see a loved one, you are in lockdown a couple of times yourself, and one of those lockdown areas looks like a dog run, what you would see at a Greyhound racing track. You're locked down in these individual things, and then the guards wait until that moment where they want to flip the switch and let you out. I was in there one day with my mother and several other women who were in there to see their children, and the gentlemen were talking about that they have several seagulls on top of their prison, and that there are two ways to get rid of those seagulls. First, you can either beat them to death with a tennis racket, or you can lure them off of the roof with a rice cake. They let us know, waiting in line, that that's how they deem to treat the prisoners inside. They'll either beat them with a tennis racket, or they will entice them with some other way.
Wow.
Now, it's a horrible thing to hear as a loved one.
Yeah.
When you're waiting, you shouldn't hear that. That shouldn't be something that the guards do, but they do. The other thing that's staggering is you think that the inmates inside get vegetables and fruit, and they do not. I just know in the facilities that I've been in, the current one where my brother's at, the fruit and the vegetables are stolen. The fruit and the vegetables rarely, if ever, make it to the inmate. So when
they're stolen by employees?
I can't say for sure who they're stolen by. It would be, all I know is it doesn't filter down to the inmates.
Wow.
And so when the families come to see the inmate, the first thing that they want their families to do is go over to the vending machines and get them orange juice or whatever vegetables are in the machine, because they don't get that.
Wow.
Now, prison will tell you that's not true. But the people who are there, who have loved ones inside, they know. And those are the people who should be talked to. And they're not.
We've gotten into, you know, we're so frustrated, especially in the, you know, state of California, where, you know, we've created all these crazy laws that let people out of prison early and all that. I think a lot of the thought process that people are getting is that prisoners have it better than, you know, I've heard people say, you know, better than our veterans. They get better medical care. They get to watch TV all the time. They get better food.
You know, and I've heard that too, and I don't even know where people are getting that. I hear that all the time. Oh, they get to play ping pong. They get to—I don't know where that's happening.
Well, it comes from people that don't know, and
right.
it's just rumor mill.
Well, it makes people mad, so it's retold.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because I can tell you that is not true. I mean, you have a TV room in a prison situation that you get to watch, but you only get to watch the programs that the gangs have on. If you are somebody like my brother who has Parkinson's disease, you don't get to be in the TV room because
right.
all those seats are already taken. You can't just come in there and turn on the TV and watch whatever you want. I mean, it's just blatant misnomers.
Well, let's face it. I don't care how big the TV is and how many channels you get. Prison's got to be the worst place in the world to try to survive. I mean, I just can't imagine being locked up like that. Nothing would make it
well, especially for something that you didn't do that you wound up
yeah.
having to agree to. And he's former law enforcement and labeled a child molester,
right.
So I'm not really sure how you get in a worse
saying,
position.
And I'm not saying, oh, prison's got to be a piece of cake, it should be that way. I'm not saying that at all. I'm not
right.
trying to imply that at any circumstance, but I will tell you, I was just visiting my brother a month ago. And I wore the same outfit that I have worn the last 16 times that I went in to visit him. And I've been able to get in to visit him. It was the same pair of jeans, the same sweater, the same shoes, the same sneakers, everything. This time when I went in to see him, they said, "You're not getting in here wearing those clothes." And I said, "I don't understand. I've worn them the last 16 times." The guy said, "I don't care. Today, you're not getting in here with that."
Really?
Had to leave, go to Walmart, purchase new clothes. By that time, they said, "You got out of line, so you don't get to get in right now."
Now, how far do you have to drive to go see him?
It was more than an 8-hour drive.
Why would it matter what clothes you're wearing?
Well, I mean, one sense I understand. You shouldn't be wearing, they don't want you to wear any shorts so your legs show. They don't want you to wear any heels. You know, there's certain things. But, I mean, I'm wearing the same pair of jeans, same sneakers, no hose, same sweater, no jewelry. But it's because they can do that.
Now, yeah.
I mean, it was egregious the way they treated me. But the gentleman who I was watching, I mean, there was a gentleman that was in his 80s. He came in with a walker. He couldn't walk without his walker. He had osteoporosis. They made him push his walker through the metal detector. It passed. He can't walk without it. I mean, his daughter was holding him while he was standing there pushing his walker through the metal detector. Then he went to walk through the walker, the metal detector, reached out for his walker, and they said, "You can't touch it." That poor man had to crawl through the metal detector. Crawl on his hands and knees.
Wow. To visit somebody in prison.
That is wrong. But you can't say anything. First of all, none of these guards that are working there, checking people in, checking family members in, wear badges. So you don't know what their names are. So even if you want to make a complaint, you don't know what their names are because they say they're doing that to protect them. So there's nothing that you can do. And if you say anything about it, they'll tell you, you will never get in here to see your loved one again. Or they'll take it out on your loved one.
Right.
Have them beaten.
Yeah.
Or have them moved. You are at their mercy. And I have seen some horrible things go on. And people think that, like I said, with the health care. My husband and I pay $250 a month for my brother's health care, which he never has gotten that health care. My brother has Parkinson's disease. His tremors are so bad. He can't keep his arms and his legs from shaking or his head.
So how does he feed himself?
Well, it's difficult. As a matter of fact, it wasn't too long ago he said that the guys were joking at the prison that they found a job for him in maintenance shaking the paint.
Nice.
Now, I mean, that's just a playful little joke. I don't think anybody meant any harm with it. But if the inmates notice that and can see it.
Yeah, he's a victim.
They will not give him any medicine for it, and they insist. And there's only so much you can do. I mean, I can get on the internet for the Federal Bureau of Prisons and voice a concern that he'll be beaten and moved again. And with somebody who has Parkinson's, you are sent through a whole system where you are in a transfer station, and if you're in a transfer station with Parkinson's, former police officer. Charged with what he's charged with, you go in the SHU, which is solitary confinement, and you could be anywhere from 42 to 65 days while they get you to where you're going to go.
Well, and you had said that if he tries to, like, carry a tray with food on it and it all spills on the floor.
That's correct.
It's like, tough luck, there's your food.
That's it. And he's in the medical wing, and if you get through if you are in the medical wing, you're one of the last people in the chow line. And when you get through the chow line, if there's no food left, that is too bad. So I know everybody says, "Oh, they get three squares, three cots, and a three hots and a cot." That's not true either.
Wow.
Not true. And whereas I don't have any problem with either Kanye West or Kim Kardashian being at the White House speaking on prison reform, I feel as though I would like to be at the White House talking with President Trump about that. I've been in the system. I've seen it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is a view that people don't get, and this isn't like the ACLU view where they think everybody needs to, you know, be coddled. These things would be considered cruel and unusual if we were doing that. We don't do this to, you know, prisoners of war or anything like that. I mean, we're pretty good with people, and it sounds like that's not happening in our
system. You know what, Aaron? I can't even say that now. I mean, if it's in the United States,
yeah, who knows?
You can throw out anything that you ever thought that the way things were handled. I never imagined that either. I mean, my husband and I have years ago when my brother first went in, he was beaten and raped, and they beat his teeth out, and his glasses were broken. They wouldn't get him glasses. We were lucky enough to be able to find a doctor who let us get those glasses. We got glasses from a mall, and we had to just guess on astigmatism.
Lovely.
To get him glasses. Now, that shouldn't be the case,
no.
But I'm telling
no.
you.
And this all stems from a false allegation that was recanted. I mean, we should really make a point of that. We've got to take one last quick break. I've got two more Bad Women songs for our show with Chris Enns. We'll be right back.
Well, did she make you cry, make you break down, shatter your illusions of love? And is it over now? Do you know how? Pick up the pieces and go home.
Fitting. Hey, okay, so we had questions on the break. He's in the federal prison system, not the state prison system, so we should make that distinction. And then how many federal prisons has he been in? That's one thing we want to know. And where was this crime supposedly committed? Was it in California?
No, it was in Missouri. It was Carroll County, Missouri.
Okay, so he got swept up in Carroll County, Missouri, and then he wound up in how many federal prisons?
Five.
A lot.
Five, six.
Wow.
Yikes.
So why do they move them?
You tell me. I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, he was in a medical facility in Terminal Island where he was getting moderate treatment. Now he's in a place that has one doctor there from India and gets no treatment.
Hmm.
So if you didn't, okay, I guess I have a split question. If you didn't pay for medical care, what would he get? And the fact that you pay for it, what does that actually do? I mean, it sounds like it's not doing anything.
It isn't doing anything, but I don't want to run the risk of not paying it in case something bad does happen to him.
Well, sure, I get that. And if you didn't pay for his medical care, what would he receive? I mean, I'm sure there are people that are in there that are perfectly fine.
That's correct, but he's always been in a medical unit because he does have Parkinson's. Now, I know at one time he was with people who didn't have anybody in their lives, and they didn't even have extra blankets. And so my brother, one of his ministries there was he would go around and he would help cover up some of these men who had terrible arthritis and couldn't even pull the covers up around their neck. So that's kind of the things that he would do before his Parkinson's got so bad. I mean, people just suffer. I'd hate to think of what they do. I mean, I've just been so focused on what goes on with my brother, and that's just it. You do your own time. So trying to find out what happens with somebody else, you don't get the pleasure of really knowing that.
Sure. When does this potentially end?
August 2022, if he lives.
It's a long haul.
You know, that's one of the things that I'm hoping with this broadcast and helping with my conversation with you is whether or not what kind of help there could be with possibly getting in to see either my representative in person to tell him about this or to be able to get into the White House and talk about that. I mean, I am not Instagramming myself in a bikini, so I don't know that I'd get into Trump's office as Kim Kardashian in that way.
I keep telling Bill to stop doing it, but he keeps trying.
but I do want to have my voice heard, and would like to know where I go from here. I mean, being able to help my brother as a private investigator, I mean, at some point that was, there's nothing I can do about that now. I've done everything I could to help him, and my goal is to be able to help other men who are being accused of such things to find their way through the system, and this is what you do and how you make it work.
What would you advise? I mean, we kind of skipped over that part. So people that you meet now, if you met someone who was, okay, so let's pretend you have all this information and now your brother's accused and you already know all of these things. What would you advise him now?
I would advise him to fight it and go all the way. I would not advise him to take a plea. That is, they want you to take a plea, so they don't have to do any of the hard work. If we had gone to court, if we had had a better attorney, and that's the other thing, you've got to screen and make sure that you've got good attorneys. And if you don't have a good attorney, you have a good private investigator who can put this information together to be able to help you with the fight.
But you had said that the statistic now is 97% are mm-hmm. convicted?
Right.
Now, is that convicted because they went to trial or convicted because they took a plea?
They took a plea.
So of the people who go to trial, what's their success rate these days? Low and going lower?
Well, no, I'm sorry. The people that go to trial, there's a 97% conviction rate.
Right, but I mean, are they part of that whole statistic?
Yeah, they are.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to tell, like, who pleads out and then who actually goes
that is
and
correct.
Tries to defend themselves.
Right, and most people aren't going to tell you. I mean, when you go to look it up, unless you talk to each one of those individually, you're not going to be able to go to the prosecuting defender's office and say, I want you to pull. As a matter of fact, if you even call the prosecuting defender's office and say, how many people last year were falsely accused of child molestation, they would say, we have no way of knowing. Which is not true, but you'd have to do all that individual legwork yourself.
Sure.
And the reason I think a lot of people plead out is they don't have the money to fight it.
That's right. If you don't have the money to fight it, as many of these people that I represent don't, they end up taking a plea. But if you are accused of child molestation and you take a plea for that, thinking that I'm not going to have to do anything other than register, you are sorely mistaken. Because what happens is you are mandated by the court to take a number of courses that you have to pay yourself. You have to go into, you have to do group counseling, individual therapy sessions, and you have to take a lie detector test every other month that you have to pay for. And that could be anywhere from $150 to $300.
Wow.
And each one of those individual sessions that you have to take, that's $150. It's $150 for the group sessions that you have to take. Hmm. So
besides the lifetime of stigma, the prison term where all sorts of horrible things will happen to you, if you live through that, then I mean, you really pretty much can't ever fit back into society because you won't be allowed to because now you're branded as a child molester.
Right. You're branded as a child molester.
Wow.
You have no access to a computer any longer.
My
brother has Parkinson's disease. I mean, it's anybody's guess what's going to happen if he lives.
Sure. At this point, I think we really just have to petition you know, moms and girls and people who work with kids, that this is not something we should be encouraging people to do as an alternative to punish someone. I mean, I don't know how that ever became acceptable, but at this point, I think we really have to come out loud against that, because this isn't something that we should, this isn't a good trend, I guess.
And men have to have a voice in it, too. They have to say, I'm not going to take this anymore.
Yeah, men should be piping up here pretty quick before they wind up under the chariot wheels.
I mean, if you are going through a divorce and your wife says, this is what I'm going to say, you have to document that kind of thing. You can't. Men can't take this. As much as women are marching and saying, you know, this is, we need to be believed because we're women, men need to say, this cannot stand.
Yeah. Instead, I think they're kind of hiding and trying to play along with it, hoping it goes away.
And it's amazing that they're in this situation where their children are being held hostage.
Yeah,
and that's being used as a bargaining chip.
Well, in the final 30 seconds, I mean, the other thing we didn't bring up, but what a way to ruin a kid's life, to encourage them to do something like that, send their dad to prison because they claimed something falsely, and they know for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, now the kid's got to live with that lie for the rest of their lives.
I've written about that on my internet site too. On my site,
I hope people go there.
It's called Malicious Mother Syndrome.
Nice. Our guest has been Chris Enns. Thank you so much. She's coming back to tell us all about Annie Oakley on a different day. We thank you very much for your input. You can find everything about her on our site, along with the archive of today's show that I hope you will share far and wide. And you've been listening to We the People. Join
Thanks
us online
for coming on,
at wethepeopleradio.us. Thanks a million, Chris. We will talk to you soon.